At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen.
It's up, it's up.
And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. Very pleased to be joined by a first-timer to Fantasy Football Weekly. It's Kent Weirach. Hey, Kent.
Hi, Charge. How we doing?
Very good. Excited for you to break your maiden on the show. Not your first ever podcast, mind you. You've done plenty of other podcasts. You've been at Pro Football Focus, my friends at the Fantasy Footballers, Number Fire, a bunch of other stops. But first time here?
Yeah. I've been listening to this podcast and radio show for a while now, and I'm happy to be here and contributing. Jump on the team.
Yeah, fantastic. You're here in the Twin Cities, located here in the Twin Cities like we are. I asked you what you want to talk about when we were dreaming up this show and how the show could go, and you gave me one really compelling. Well, all your topics are good. I don't want to make it sound like there was only one good one, but we have not yet touched on the key offseason changes with some teams that are going to have widespread effect on their offenses.
Yeah, we're at that point in the season now where we're between free agency, the big changes in the coaching cycle, and the NFL draft, which is coming up in a few weeks. And it's all one big puzzle that we got to put together. And so, most of these puzzle pieces have fallen into place, and we got to identify what are the big sweeping changes in terms of offensive identity, and what does that mean for fantasy?
Yeah, absolutely. And the teams we're going to touch on are all teams, Kent, that are largely broken teams that have undergone major change. And so sometimes I think the teams aren't going to sound that exciting up front. But if we talked about Houston at this time last year, it wouldn't have sounded that exciting up front.
Yeah.
Some of these teams, five teams, are going to get a lot better. Panthers, Falcons, Patriots, Chargers, Titans, in most cases get better. We'll talk it through and see what we think. I'm excited to drill down on these teams with you. Let's start with, and by the way, before we even get into that, let's just hit on the Stephon Diggs things. It's such big news that's came down midweek a few days ago. Your thoughts on first the Buffalo offense that is currently right now really in a weak spot at wide receiver. You know, Khalil Shakir is probably their best wide receiver on roster right now. How do you see this Bills offense as it sits today? Obviously, plenty will change over the course of the draft.
Yeah, I like Khalil Shakir quite a bit. I think he's very solid in that supporting role. I don't know if he can be a one in this offense. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Josh Allen right now, I'm not happy. Diggs, despite maybe there's some ongoing cryptic tweeting on the side these days, but you still need someone to catch the football. And Josh Allen, while he is very, very talented, probably the second best quarterback in the NFL right now, you still need a solid receiving core to back that up. And if you start to dismantle the entire receiving operation, Everything else could fall with it.
And, Shakir ran about 60% of his snaps from the slot. Their big free agent addition was Curtis Samuel, right? So, we really don't have any outside receivers that we feel comfortable with on the Bills right now. And, I'm sure it'll change in the draft. I mean, they have a mandate now to go get receivers and
Pretty much. More
than one. So we'll see how this thing shakes out. Maybe there's a trade in the future, draft day trade or after the trade if the draft doesn't fall the way the Bills want. But right now, Man, you know, not that Diggs was the contributor that he used to be, but Kent, I just don't love the way this Bills offense looks without reliable help at receiver. Tight ends look solid, but you know, you need more than that.
Yeah, and you know, last year they went through some offensive coordinator changes as well. They went from Dorsey to Joe Brady, and that came with its own set of challenges as well. And so the Bills, they kind of need to figure something out if they're going to find a new offensive identity. And, you know, their run game, well, it's good. I wouldn't say it's their core structure.
Right.
And so, you know, we're looking in a new direction. And I think you're right. At the back of the first round, the Bills are almost a certainty to draft a wide receiver, provided they stay in that slot.
Yeah. And then the other side of that, of course, is the receiver that some people would say is the second best receiver quarterback in football. C.J. Stroud ends up gaining Stephon Diggs. I think Diggs goes into a spot where he's basically the third best receiver by a little. You know, I think Nico Collins and what we saw to Tank Dell looked fantastic. It'll be fascinating to see what Diggs is able to do and what kind of player he is. And now, what is just a 1-year prove it deal, basically $24 million prove it deal, but a 1-year deal with Houston as a complement among three good receivers.
Yeah, and I actually just recently saw a tweet from Field Yates talking about the contract structure of Stephon Diggs, and I think they got that cap number for this year down to like just a handful, like $2 to $3 million or something like that. So they may not be done. Obviously, there's a handful of void years tacked on, as every contract these days seems to have, but they may be adding more pieces. The Houston Texans, whether offense or defense, you know, they've got quite a team, and I think they're set up very nicely to continue back to the playoffs for the second time.
All right, from just a fantasy outlook only, what's the order you would draft the Houston wide receivers?
Yeah, it's going to be Nico Collins first for me still. He's just been so reliable and steadfast for that offense. Plays an extremely, you know, robust route tree, is able to make all sorts of different throws, or excuse me, catch all different sorts of throws and run all different sorts of routes. I did see that Tank Dell had a little bit of a divergence in his yards per route run when he's in 11 personnel versus having just two wide receivers on the field. So, you know, I probably still take, between Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, I think I'm going to go Diggs second and Dell very, very closely behind.
I'm exactly the same spot.
Yeah.
Exactly the same spot you are. And I like Tank Dell a lot. I just, you know, we didn't get the full season from him, you know, and I think he's going to have a great career and maybe even turns out to be the best of the three in the long run. But he also runs a lot of slot routes. Slot routes are, it's hard to get paid fantasy style from slot receivers. It's not impossible, but Cooper Kupp is the outlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's dive into the offseason changes that are going to affect entire offenses. I've set you up for the Panthers. I mean, it almost feels like get it out of the way, right? But let's go through the most dysfunctional team in probably all of sports, the Panthers. They are paying four different head coaches right now, which is pretty amazing. They've brought in some pedigree now with their coaching staff in the hope that they can effectively do for Bryce Young what they did for Baker Mayfield in Tampa. Let's talk it through.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. I mean, Baker had quite a year last year. I think he had a career high in touchdowns with 28 passing touchdowns last year. So you might recall that the Panthers had Frank Reich and Thomas Brown last year as their head coach, offensive coordinator duo, and they actually flip-flopped a few times between play-calling duties.
Right.
And, you know, truth be told, neither of them were all that spectacular. So
yeah.
It's tough to say it could get much worse than that, but you know, you just have high hopes and positivity. So the incoming staff is head coach Dave Canales and OC Brad Idzik. Idzik. That's a tough one for me to say. But they're both coming over from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think what they're looking to apply to this Panthers team is a more balanced approach in regards to the personnel usage, how they're going to deploy their offensive weapons. And so, you know, looking at some of the key changes in the offense, key using very loosely here, but they lost LaVisca Chenault, DJ Chark. I think they're fine.
They're fine.
Chenault was ultimately a disappointment based on some
for
people's
sure.
fantasy projections. Mm-hmm. But what they did gain was two, I would say, sizable offensive guard signings, and they were going through pretty much like a patchwork turnstile situation in their guards. They had seven or eight guys playing each side over the course of the year. So they've made their offensive line more robust. They traded for Deontay Johnson, which I think is a good play overall.
See, I disagree a little bit in that. I feel like he's Adam Thielen in a lot of ways, younger version of Adam Thielen, where you're going to get somebody who can play all three positions, but somebody who doesn't take the top off the defense anymore, catches what's thrown to him, he'll run the routes, he'll be in the same spot. I just felt like they added a slightly younger Adam Thielen to their offense that already had Adam Thielen.
Yeah, that's reasonable. It's worth noting that last year was his highest average depth of target to date, and mm-hmm. he's still only 27 years old. So
yep.
We could still see his development happening in real time. And, you know, he's been a very steady receiver, catching lots of balls. Obviously, the touchdowns haven't always been there, and that's been a point of contention.
Clearly,
but
yes.
That may still be the case here with the Panthers unless we see a big turnaround. But also worth noting that they have 2 second-round picks. You know, they don't have their first because of the Bryce Young deal.
Yep.
But those are at 33rd and 39th overall, and that's
pretty early.
It's pretty early, and that's prime wide receiver, like that second, third tier yep. of wide receiver.
Yep.
And I know that Thor said he likes a lot of the depth in this class.
He does,
so,
yes.
You know, they could definitely be adding another wide receiver very early in the draft in a couple weeks.
Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, given what they paid to get Bryce Young, given how humiliating it will be if he doesn't work out, I do feel like the Panthers are trying to surround him with as much talent as possible so that if Bryce Young fails now, it will have been through 2 coaching staffs, it'll be with better receivers, it'll be with a better offensive line, and now it's really on Bryce Young and less on the Panthers.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, last year, I'd say most people still liked Bryce Young as a prospect over C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, most did.
In the first year, that flipped pretty aggressively, but there's still a reason to be, you know, have some hope that mm-hmm. the prospect can come to fruition here. And it's kind of funny, you know, the head coach and the offensive coordinator come from the Buccaneers. They had Baker Mayfield last year. There's some really funny parallels between 2022 Baker and 2023 Ooh. Bryce Young.
All right, let's hear it.
So in 2022, Baker played 11 games, and so we have some rate metrics here that we can look at. 60% completion, 10 passing touchdown to 8 interceptions, 7.8 depth of target, and then his passing grade was 52.2 from Oof. PFF.
Yeah. yeah.
It looked like he was done. And, you know, ironically, he started that year as a Panther as well. So that's
yeah,
kind of
right,
an extra little
right.
layer there.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Bryce Young played 16 out of 17 games, and he also had 60% completion, 11 passing touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 7.8 average depth of target, and his PFF passing grade was 52.6. So
dang, right on.
We're looking at a mirror image yeah. pretty much on some of these rate metrics. And you know, Baker, like I said, last year turned it around, had a very solid season, led mm-hmm. the Bucs to the playoffs. They were a very, very strong offense. Look, this Panthers team doesn't have Mike Evans. I get it. But they're trying to make something that they can put together piece by piece. And so Deontay Johnson is one of those pieces. And I think that Bryce Young has an opportunity, maybe not a certainty, to advance in terms of the passing game.
I think there's a lot to that. It, in a dynasty super flex, I'm buying Bryce Young. What you'd have to give to get him in super flex, you might be able to give a early second rounder for Bryce Young. And, you know, that's a point at which I'm really interested in gambling on him being a bounce back candidate.
Absolutely. Quarterbacks are very high variance, actually, especially early in their careers.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to believe we know the whole story when the book hasn't even gone past the first chapter.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's go to the Falcons. So Falcons, the offseason news for the Falcons, players, and everything around the organization, it's all good. There's nothing bad that's happened here at all. I love their offseason. Fantasy players have to be delighted with the upgrade from Arthur Smith to, well, frankly, anybody. You know, insert carbon-based life form here. We'll take Raheem Morris as the offensive coordinator, but more importantly, Raheem Morris is your head coach. More importantly, offensive coordinator Zach Robinson. And obviously the massive upgrade at quarterback from the highly inconsistent Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder to Kirk Cousins. Cousins has obviously proven to provide elite-level production to his wide receivers, Justin Jefferson, his tight ends, T.J. Hockenson, and it's vaulted the value of Kyle Pitts and Drake London to really almost new heights, or at least back to the heights of where they were as rookies when they were both lottery picks as first-rounders.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they've got some interesting changes on their coaching staff, too, bringing
yeah.
in offensive coordinator Zach Robinson. Another high utilizer of 11 personnel, three wide receivers on the field, and Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and they even, you know, in the Desmond Ridder trade, got Rondale Moore. Mm-hmm. That's an intriguing start to that process. I wouldn't be surprised if they add one more wide receiver to fill out their depth a little bit more. But it's going to be a fun team to watch.
What do we know about Zach Robinson? Not much. So, I mean, here's what we got to work with. He was a quarterback for Oklahoma State, throwing to Dez Bryant. If you go back far enough here, he was a seventh-round draft pick who managed to hang on a variety of different practice squads for a few years. Then he went to work for Pro Football Focus.
Yep.
By the way, he's working there with Houston's offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick, at the same time. PFF turning into a launching pad for careers. He's from, most recently, the Sean McVay tree. He worked as their assistant quarterback coach, then their assistant wide receiver coach. And then he went back to assistant quarterback coach. And then for the last 2 years, he was the quarterback coach and the passing game coordinator for Sean McVay. Mm-hmm. And that's all you have to do to get a head coaching job in the NFL now. So he's only 37 years old, Zach Robinson. He's never called plays, which is a concern. I like, though, that he's used to calling a Matthew Stafford-led offense, which translates pretty closely to Kirk Cousins' skill set.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't think he needs to relearn that. You mentioned that he likes 11 personnel. Get this. Rams ran 11 personnel on 90% of their plays. 90. And that means we're going to see more emphasis, I believe, on Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts, who are going to be in less of timeshares now. If we're running 11 with one running back and one tight end, those are the running backs, and that's the running back and the tight end that's going to be on the field.
That's right.
I certainly hope. You know, other McVay disciples have gone on to develop very pass-heavy schemes, and honestly, I'm hoping that's going to be the case here too. Cincinnati's Zach Taylor, Minnesota's Kevin O'Connell have both finished in the top five in pass play percentage in back-to-back years. So if Zach Robinson is going to be as pass heavy, that would be outstanding, I think, for most fantasy use. Kirk Cousins opens up the entire field for the Falcons in a way we haven't seen since Matt Ryan was good. That's a while ago now. Kirk's passer rating on throws over 10 yards is 120 last year in half season. Kirk's passer rating on throws over 20 yards only drops 3 points, 117. On passes of 20 or more yards. This is nothing we've seen in the Falcons offense. As an example, Drake London last year, really his whole career has not been a downfield threat. Over the past 2 years, Drake London has caught 14 passes of over 20 yards.
Wow.
That's it.
Yeah. That's about to change.
It. That's going to change. Darnell Mooney could reach newfound productivity from the slot, where Kirk Cousins has been highly proficient with J.J. and Thielen in the past. And, of course, Sean McVay utilized the slot copiously with Cooper Kupp, and Zach Robinson may carry over some of those schemes for Darnell Mooney, who they went out of their way to acquire in the offseason. I think Bijan Robinson's a total wild card, Kent. So, you know, the good news is the McVay tree shows a dedication to a single back, which I love. That's like Todd Gurley, Kyren Williams last year, Joe Mixon, Dalvin Cook, even Alexander Mattison last year with Kevin O'Connell, despite being wildly ineffective, maintained the stranglehold on getting virtually all the work for Minnesota for most of the year. So that part I love about the upside of Bijan Robinson, but the McVay tree doesn't pass that much to their runners. You know, all the guys that I just mentioned, Gurley, Williams, Mixon, Cook, Mattison, typically clocking in with like 40 catch seasons, 400 receiving yards is pretty normal. Todd Gurley had, in his crazy 2017 year, he caught a bunch of passes and he had like 800 yards. But, overwhelmingly, we haven't seen a lot of aerial work for McVay tree runners. Bijan Robinson, though, maybe just he's so skilled as a receiver that Zach Robinson ends up using him more that way.
Yeah, and, despite Arthur Smith's propensity to deploy Tyler Allgeier in copious amounts,
yes.
He kind of fell off a little bit last year relative to the year prior, and bringing in Rondale Moore, I think they'll maybe have some backfield packages for him, but pretty few and far between. Bijan Robinson represents an opportunity to score a bunch of touchdowns this year, and I'm very excited for him.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see. all the McVay tree, those they don't generally take their lead backs off the field inside the 5 yard line. Mm-hmm. And that's where Bijan Robinson was really not very effective last year for providing fantasy points. It just, you know, those easy touchdowns weren't there for him. And he had to score from distance more often than not. And for Bijan, that's, you know, for any back, that's a lot harder to do.
Yeah. Luckily, he's good at that.
Like, he has a sizable track record with that, which is great. I want to work in a break. When we come back, let's go to the Patriots. And let's talk about the changes that they've got there. No Bill Belichick. Jared Mayo's in. Alex Van Pelt's your offensive coordinator. Jacoby Brissett's the quarterback of the moment. Let's talk through Patriots changes when we return.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yep. It's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Kent Weirach. How do you feel? You're halfway through your first show.
Oh, man, it's so much fun. I'm just so glad to be here, and I'm having a blast.
All right, I love it. Well, let's dig. Let's see if we can have fun with the Patriots. I'm fascinated to see what life is like without Bill Belichick. It's been like our entire adult lives, right, since Belichick's been there, and we finally get some new blood in, and they've needed it in the worst way. I think the worst overall roster in the NFL may very well be the Patriots. Panthers are in this conversation too, but Patriots overall roster, just disaster grade top to bottom. What can we salvage out of this? What do you think Alex Van Pelt will do, offensive coordinator with Jared Mayo? Presumably Van Pelt will have almost all of the offensive power here. What do you expect to change?
Yeah, well, first things first, I think I might rather take the Panthers offense over the Patriots. But
yeah,
we're going to see some differences and some changes, obviously. And exiting the Belichick era is a very distinct event for all of us to witness. But
yeah.
Jerod Mayo is a linebackers coach, previously defensive-minded. The offensive coordinator, like you said, Alex Van Pelt, coming from the Cleveland Browns. He spent the last 4 seasons there. And he had one other stint as a Bills offensive coordinator back in 2009. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see how he affects this offense, and we'll work our way through that. But they, as far as key losses, again, key very loosely, Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki.
Addition by subtraction,
exactly.
Honestly.
Exactly. So, the remaining receiving cores, Kendrick Bourne, Demario Douglas, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Hunter Henry. So that's, I think, overall, a very flat, fine group. But no one is elevating, and no one is really dragging it down.
I would never use the word fine on that group of receivers, but if you want to be charitable, that's fine. I'll let you do that.
I'll do my best to give them a little credit charge, but Yeah, and you know, as far as some people that they've added to the roster, they will have, I would say, likely a new quarterback at the first, at the third overall pick,
which keeps happening to Jacoby Brissett everywhere he goes. Right?
Exactly.
All he does is play pretty good functional quarterback, and everybody's like, "Oh, we got to start somebody else over you."
Yeah, and even if they do draft a rookie, I would say it's probably pretty likely that Jacoby Brissett starts the season still and they work the rookie in. We'll see. That remains depending on who they take. But they also added Antonio Gibson to the backfield, another wide receiver, KJ Osborne, which, again, kind of just fits in the group, and a backup tight end in Austin Hooper. So I think the question now is, what kind of fantasy value can you glean from this group? And if I had to make a bet, it would be on Ramondre Stevenson. This is an offensive coordinator, Van Pelt, who likes to run the ball. He obviously had Nick Chubb at his disposal, and even when he was back at as the Bills' offensive coordinator, he had two running backs by the name of Fred Jackson and Marshawn Lynch.
Maybe
you've heard of them.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Fred Jackson was one of the great stories out of what his college, like Lane or something. And No. Did he go to... where did Fred Jackson play college? Was it like South Dakota or
something? It's a hair before my time, unfortunately.
Right, yeah. And I can't remember that far back.
So, you know, he likes to run the ball. And I have a quote from him here. He said, "I think that running the football in this league wins games, wins championships. He is dedicated to it. Mm-hmm. He's going to try and pound the rock. Now we got to figure out if Ramondre Stevenson is the guy who can handle that workload." In Cleveland, he had Nick Brown as his lead back and obviously was rushing the ball insane amounts of time with him. However, even when Nick Chubb went down last year, he split a very heavy ninth in rush rate amount of carries between Kareem Hunt and Jerome Ford, two guys that are
They're not Nick Chubb.
Very ho-hum, exactly. So he was fine running the ball even with them, and that was 339 rushing attempts between them for a whopping 3.6 yards per carry.
Yikes.
Yeah. To date, Ramondre Stevenson has yet to surpass 13 rushing attempts per game, a mark that is one entire rushing attempt below what Nick Chubb has been since his rookie season. So you got to see him step up, because I don't see Antonio Gibson as a runner anymore. Mm-hmm. He had just his career low 65 rushing attempts last year.
Yeah.
And he's coming off a career high 318 routes run, which is just 21 fewer than Ramondre's 2022 breakout season. So we will probably see Antonio Gibson harvesting some of that pass-catching work from Ramondre Stevenson while Stevenson's pounding the rock on first and second down. So that's a bit unfortunate in the PPR game, and we're probably not going to see a ton of rushing touchdowns out of this team. So it's a question mark. But if Ramondre Stevenson can stay healthy and contribute to this team, and maybe their first, you know, maybe Drake May leads them to the promised land.
Yeah.
You have an opportunity to seize a lot of value.
I love Ramondre Stevenson. Longtime listeners know. I think he's a way, way underappreciated power back who has languished behind some bad offensive lines, playing with a quarterback who gives defenses nothing to fear. For most of the past 2 years, it's been shut down Ramondre Stevenson. You shut down this offense. So I want to believe that this new scheme, hopefully better players, hopefully an improved offensive line, either through the draft, free agency, will unlock Stevenson with a heavy workload here. And I want to get him back to, like, let's get double-digit touchdowns for Ramondre Stevenson.
That would be nice.
You know, he is such a good power back that I want to believe he can get there, and I think he can. Let's go over to the Chargers. And by the way, I don't think it even matters. Patriots likely go quarterback at pick three. If they trade down, they could still go quarterback. Who knows? But I don't think it's going to matter that much. If it's Brissett or rookie quarterback learning on the job, I'm with you. This is a run-heavy offense.
Mm-hmm.
Chargers. Massive, massive flux for the entire team, right? Particularly the offense. So gone are Brandon Staley, Kellen Moore from the coaching staff, by the way, change of general manager as well. Joe Horitz is in as the new general manager. And, of course, Jim Harbaugh, Greg Roman are there. You can't ask for a more obvious blueprint of what's coming than having Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman as your coaches. It's the biggest tell ever. Also gone, nearly every offensive asset who made a meaningful contribution over the past 5 years outside of Justin Herbert. So Austin Eckler's now in Washington. Keenan Allen's in Chicago. Mike Williams is with the Jets. And to this point, as a group, they have been replaced by basically nobody. I mean, Gus Edwards, but basically nobody to this point. So what do we expect from Harbaugh and Roman? Running, obviously. Here's some data. Harbaugh at Michigan last year, Michigan ran the ball 38 times per game and passed 24.
Oh, man.
It's a 39% pass rate. 39%. That is leather helmet era stuff right there. The prior year, Michigan ran the ball 43 times per game for a 37% pass rate. I mean, even if you roll back, I went back and I looked back at NFL data 20 years. So I went all the way back to 2004. No team was even close to a 61% run rate. No team. I think the next closest team was like 7% off of that. So, I mean, you know, this is the potential. Even with Justin Herbert as the only obvious talent in like left in this offense, there's the potential here for whoever ends up being the lead runner. And it's TBD. It's through the draft. Almost certainly, yeah. Somebody's gonna have a lot of usage coming. Let's talk Greg Roman. You already probably know that when he was offensive coordinator at Baltimore for 4 years, the Ravens ran all the time. Ravens rank and run play percentage during Greg Roman's tenure over those 4 years were first, 11th, and third. And obviously Lamar Jackson skews those rankings, but even without Jackson, just the Ravens runners alone under Greg Roman were averaging 21 carries per game under him. That's a healthy number. Harbaugh could have picked a lot of people to be his offensive coordinator, Kent. He picked Greg Roman.
He's trying to recreate the national championship charge. Wants run.
Run. But who's going to run the ball? So Gus Edwards, you know, maybe he's better another year removed from his ACL injury of 2 years ago. But honestly, he looked tired and spent last year. And I've been a big Gus Edwards proponent and was up into the injury. Gus turns 29 years old this week. He was Pro Football Focus's 41st ranked runner last year. And he ranked 53rd. In PFF's elusiveness rankings, and has had declining yards per carry in four straight seasons, down to 4.1 last year. I think Gus is about done.
Yeah, his age really snuck up on us, didn't it?
It really did, yeah.
I agree with you. They're going to add someone through the draft, regardless of Greg Roman's connection to Gus Edwards back at Baltimore. You know, that might limit the rookies' incoming touch numbers, but
yeah.
I can't see Gus being the lead guy. Just not something
I can't either.
Contribute to.
If you told me the Chargers were going to be the first team to take a running back in this draft, I'd be like, yeah, that makes total sense.
Everyone's connecting Blake Corum to
everybody is connecting.
Recreate the championship.
And maybe it's going to go that way. You know, a lot of people have put Michigan running back Blake Corum on the Chargers, and you probably don't have to. He's right now being mocked into the fourth, fifth round. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they wouldn't have to give up a lot to go get Blake Corum if they do. They could spend a third and just go get him. And I like Corum's productivity. I like the footwork. I like the balance and the build. He's got some sneaky acceleration, but does not have long speed, doesn't have natural elusiveness. Thor is pretty down on him, which I trust Thor a lot. And so I think he's a middling talent, but you know what? It might not matter. Mm-hmm. You know, if this team's going to give 20, 25 rushing attempts to its running backs a game, you don't have to be that good to be fantasy effective.
Volume is key. That's the old saying.
Yep. I'd love to see them go get Trey Benson. He's my favorite rookie runner in the draft. So I know that's if Trey Benson goes to the Chargers, he will be inside my top 10 at the running back position in my rankings. Now, right now, Chargers are sitting at pick 5 of the draft. That's going to yield them Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. Kent, you know, both are amazing prospects who get to catch passes from an excellent quarterback. The only question is, how many passes are you going to get from Greg Roman? As a team under Greg Roman, here are the Ravens' rankings for wide receiver fantasy points scored. 4 years of Greg Roman offenses, here's where the wide receivers have ranked as a group. 31st, 23rd, 30th, and 31st. There's your 4 years of Greg Roman coaching with the Ravens wide receiver group. So as good as Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison might be, and the fact they've got Justin Herbert, I mean, this should be a lot of passing, and it should be productive early. There's some reason for worry there. Now, granted, Nabers or Harrison will be better than any receiver Roman ever worked with in Baltimore. So there's that.
Yeah, I would say there's nowhere to go from up from those fantasy point numbers. But, you know, like you said, Greg Roman has never been outside the top 10 in rushing attempts in his entire NFL career as a coach.
Yeah.
And that's where we're on 15 years or so now. I don't know exactly.
So we know.
He's committed. And no matter what coaching staff he's been a part of, he's infected them with his running nature. So
infected. I like it. Make it sound like a virus.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Tennessee. New head coach is Brian Callahan. We've got some data on him, which I think is we're going to find helpful here. I don't like Will Levis. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope year two is better, and it probably will be better. But I didn't like what I saw last year much at all. Big arm. I don't like any of the fundamentals. I don't like the technique. I don't like the ball placement. I don't like the decision making. I hope he gets a lot better in this new offense, or maybe they surprise everybody and take a quarterback at 7.
Ooh, that would be a surprise. I'd
like it. Yeah. I'm on board for it because I don't think Will Levis is the guy.
At this point, I'd say my betting money would be on the fact that they will not be in play for a quarterback because we will have 4 off the board already.
That's my feelings on the matter,
but yep. The draft is a chaotic event every year, so I could be surprised. But if they are sticking with Will Levis, I think there's what they've tried to do is create a structure around him such that they're going to find out if he can succeed. And, you know, he might not. Those fundamentals might come back and bite him, and he won't be able to compete. But looking at who they brought in, we got, like you said, head coach Brian Callahan coming from the Bengals, was the offensive coordinator there. Their new offensive coordinator on the Titans is Nick Holtz, first-time NFL offensive coordinator, but was the passing game coordinator for the Jaguars. So, you know, in the last couple of years, or I should say last year, the Bengals were second in pass rate, like you said earlier in this segment, and they were second in pass rate over expectation. Mm-hmm. And then the Jaguars were 5th in pass rate over expectation. So, you know, those early downs where you're not sure if they're going to pass or throw, they tended to throw more. And that's something that I'm sure they're going to look to do with Will Levis as well. You know, they lost Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I guess that's really kind of the lead story here too, right?
Yeah, exactly. They replaced mm-hmm. him with Tony Pollard, which is a massive downgrade. No one's going to argue that. But Tony Pollard at least brings some pass catching chops to the table that Derrick Henry never really had. So I think that's interesting. The Calvin Ridley contract was pretty sizable. They were very interested in bringing him to the
team. I was
team.
Shocked they gave him so much money.
Yeah.
Honestly. You know, Ridley was such a hit and miss and mostly miss producer for the Jaguars, you know, and the fact that Jaguars didn't make seemingly that much of an effort to keep him, I don't know. I think Tennessee overpaid.
Yeah, it very likely that is the case, but he has familiarity with Nick Holtz, the offensive coordinator, the Jaguars.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
Should get him involved in the offense pretty mm-hmm. well. Obviously, at that price point, you better hope he is.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably, you know, you said quarterback, I think offensive tackle at 7 in the draft.
Everybody's got Joe Alt going.
Possibly Joe Alt there.
Everybody thinks that's the case.
And they're in the middle of kind of reworking that offensive line, too, from a few years back. So yeah,
remember like 4 years ago, it was the best offensive line in football, and it just got picked apart by injury and free agency, and last year was one of the bottom like 3 offensive lines, and that's your built-in excuse for why Will Levis didn't perform all that well. But you know what, that's what they said about Kenny Pickett, and they tried to rebuild an offensive line. They gave him another chance, didn't matter. Kenny Pickett didn't pan out. Desmond Ridder had a middling rookie year. They're like, okay, we're gonna give him another chance, didn't work out. I think more often than not, Kent, the guys who don't show enough in their first year never get it.
That's then if you're using that historically, that's a very predictive way to look at things, and I don't doubt that for a second. So
that's why I go quarterback. But anyway, yeah. If one of the 4 is there, I probably would if I were Tennessee.
Yeah, you mentioned the big arm. Will Levis last year had the highest average depth of target mm-hmm. with 11.1 yards. The second highest with 9.3 was C.J. Stroud. So
wow.
They are looking downfield, and they built a pretty decent receiving core around him. DeAndre Hopkins is still there, aging, mm-hmm. but still good, good in the red zone. Calvin Ridley, very similar. Treylon Burks, you know what? He's in a tertiary role now. Maybe that's where he finds his stride and becomes a more of a supporting cast type receiver.
We'll take any stride.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mentioned Tony Pollard, and then even Chigokonkwo was fine as like a fifth option in terms of passing. So,
yeah. if you're in a dropped balls league.
Well, yes.
That would help. Now, you haven't mentioned Tajay Spears once.
Well,
and
yeah.
I was very excited. I invested in my dynasty leagues and empire leagues. I invested in some Tajay Spears last year, figuring Derrick Henry would be gone. He'd get a lot more work. The Pollard signing, jeez.
Yeah, he kind of smeared that a little bit, but yeah. He was exciting at times last year. There were a few flexible games, even when Henry was still playing and starting. So I think there's reason to still keep that hope and expectation for him on your bench. You're not starting him, I would say, right out the gates. But Pollard could give this job up over the course of the year. I don't think that's written off at all.
If he's the Tony Pollard from last year,
well,
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a shocking turn of events, I think, for people. Pollard, as I recall, drafted second round in most fantasy drafts last year.
Yes, yeah, he was pretty high up there.
End of first, early second round. Mm-hmm. Wow, the fall off the table as a workhorse back for Dallas, just amazing.
Yeah, it's a tale as old as time. You see the backup running back putting up really good rate metrics and efficient numbers, and then you put him in the starter spot, and it all goes down. So. Yeah.
Some guys aren't built for that.
That's right.
Yeah, some guys aren't built for that. You think Callahan will be as prodigious and as heavily pass focused as he was in Cincinnati? Now that he's with Tennessee and does not have, he does not have the kind of weapons he had in Cincinnati, aerial weapons he had in Cincinnati at all. So was he just playing to his strengths because he had great talent at wide receiver and quarterback, and Joe Burrow and T. Higgins, and then you go to Tennessee, and he's the fall off is fairly dramatic.
Yeah, no, that's certainly something that's in the cards, and he probably won't be second in pass rate again. Probably won't be second in pass rate over expectation again. But I do see them committing to the passing game, and they were third in 11 personnel usage on early downs last year as well. Granted, like you said. Very elite group of wide receivers over in Cincinnati, but they put together a decent set of receivers here. A little bit older, a little bit worse, but they're making an effort to try and set up a similar structure, and I think that the structure is there to find out if Will Levis is ready to be the starter or not.
Great job, Kent. Congratulations on your first show in Fantasy Football Weekly. Everybody, we'll be back next week for more. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.